podcast where we give you all the plot hooks that you will ever need in your entire game playing career. I'm your host, Ainsley Weber, and with me today I have two people to help me deliver these plot hooks to you. One is...
Old Maddie Hannibal Butler, that's right, your old pal.
Is the humming, is that part of your name?
Of course, it's in my theme song on Delicious Word Sandwich.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that. And across the table we have returning again...
Dom Guilfoyle. I'm more of half a person, really, kind of on the inside. So
okay.
Like, we have 1.5 people joining us.
Well, you know. I'll round up. Just... I like whole numbers.
You're erasing my status as a half person right
How
now.
How dare you?
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry. I myself am a 3/4 person. So,
okay, so I'm going to lift the weight here. I'm going to be two people and 1/4. Did I do my math right?
No, not at all. but, you know, that's valid. That's fine.
But you tried. Right. And we appreciate the effort. Okay, so if you're joining us for the first time, on this podcast, we take inspiration from a Magic the Gathering card and a random word, and we try to create some plot hooks for you to use in your game, be they NPCs, be them settings, be them spells, or any number of things that could appear in a game. So... I had a get to know you question that I would like to ask both of you.
Let's do it.
In any role-playing game that you've played, what is your favorite god or demigod, some sort of omniscient being?
Very good question. So I play in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, and there is a god called Apollyon, who I think is very prominent with the dwarves. And I really enjoy him because he has the two sides to him and two lines of worship. And these two lines of worship, as religions do, these sects are at war with each other. Mm-hmm. One of them is the hammer or the anvil, and it's all about creationism. And the other is it the hammer or the sword? I can't remember.
Who knows?
But
it's homebrew.
I think my character might worship him, and I don't remember.
Yeah. It's creating and destruction, and I love that kind of duality to the god and how one character I'm playing with, he kind of worshipped them as one of the same, and he was like a radical, and I love that angle.
Awesome.
So my previous character was a paladin who worshipped a homebrew god that I created called the Shield Maiden, and was very kind of Viking-inspired sort of thing, obviously. And the Shield Maiden was all about like the joy of combat and about the joy of overcoming your foes and supporting your allies, and that's how you worship her, is by getting in combat and having a good time. And I was really excited to experiment with that for a while, and then D&D happened, where you lose, especially when you're a paladin and you're the tank, you get fucked up a lot. And I've always had the trouble where it's hard to keep a consistent outlook on something so consistent in D&D when really, like, you know, in a scripted story, getting beaten up as badly as your character frequently does would shake your faith. So it became very difficult to continue worshipping a god about having a good time in fights when my character kept having a bad time in fights. Because apart from anything else, I'm very unlucky. So I'm not gonna say the Shield Maiden. Plot twist, I'm gonna say
whoa,
a previous campaign.
Take that, Shield Maiden.
Yeah, suck shit. I stopped playing that character because it was unpleasant in the end.
Sticking it to it, but she didn't die as she was supposed to, if I remember.
I tried to write that character out, and then the rest of the
team saved you somehow.
It was that I agree with the DM that this is what we're going to do, and then the rest of the group started, because I was supposed to like follow a demon into hell, because I figured out that's where my god was trapped in hell. Long story. And then the rest of the team fought so hard to save me that I just like quietly messaged the DM and said, I can't force them to fail. I can't be like, no, I fall in anyway. So I let them succeed and then like talk to them and left.
And two of them almost died.
Yeah. A lot of, they were just like, they were really fighting hard. And I was just like,
so
and,
hard.
And the DM was just messaging me saying, are you going to go into the portal or not? Like, and I'm just like, no, because like they're role playing hard. They're fighting so hard. They're doing a really good job. And I can't just be like, no, I fall in anyway. So like afterwards I was like, my character's like, I'm going to go and find a way to go to hell, but like, I'm not going to fall in, like, and die because of this. So anyway, the god that I want to talk about, my favorite god, was a previous campaign. The DM, Xander, created a god called Xandor, who basically just was a frequent deus ex machina when the group just completely screwed up, like, the bunch of idiots that they were. Mm. He was just, every now and again, Xandor would help out. That's a slight, I like that as a way of yeah.
It's good to see a dungeon master being honest.
I've had a very similar situation honestly, my very first D&D 5e campaign. I played a great older one warlock, and the DM in like my third or fourth game just decided that the great old one patron was actually me, like the player.
You're worshipping yourself?
Yes.
That's always an interesting, yeah.
I've yeah. And I was like, what does that mean? Can I just tell him things that I know that he doesn't know? Because I will.
Oh, you will.
That's a risky thing to give, the power to give you that specifically, because you'll go far with that. You're a player who will go to the edge of what DM will allow you to do.
You'll turn the campaign into a Russian doll of stories.
Like. Well, you know, it was just the very next session where I got overkilled by a stray axe from a city guard. So that was the end of that story.
And that's
but
the
it was
end
a fun
that
was a
and
fun
that
god.
City guard killed a god and never knew.
Never knew.
Wow.
Never knew.
Weirdly fragile god.
Yeah, it turns out god imbuing the body of a warlock in 5e, bad move. Warlocks are kind of underpowered.
Yes.
All right, well, shall we get into our inspiration? So we have World Knit, which is a conspiracy card from Magic the Gathering, and it has what looks to be some sort of traveler standing on one of three snake-like gargoyle things.
They look like kind of like peninsular outcropping sort of things, but they're also in the shape of beasts. It's interesting.
Yeah,
they look natural, but
they're very basilisky in a way.
Yeah, well, they kind of look like those gargoyles that are also like runoff.
That's a gargoyle.
A gargoyle
specifically is the one that has the water spout. A grotesque is the one that doesn't.
Oh, there you go.
Then they look like gargoyles overlooking a rather picturesque, golden lit river valley with mountains in the distance. So not a lot of specifics to go on, but our random word is conviction.
Conviction.
Mm. Yeah. So who wants to go first? Who has a pledge?
I have something.
Okay.
So this is setting or a concept sort of thing, basically. A civilization or a town or something where their powers they have the power over people's life essence and their body, and they can kind of unravel themselves into pure magical essence, that sort of thing. They're very adept at controlling their own forms. And the greatest punishment in this civilization is to forcibly undo another person and weave them into the landscape itself, and they become part of the earth in a physical, magical way, still conscious, but now part of the landscape forever.
So that's kind of like using WorldNet as a punishment.
Yeah. Like enforced entropy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also conviction, because they've been convicted. I'm so clever.
Bam.
Yeah. So yes, they knit or weave people into the fabric of the world around them. And they are still conscious but trapped.
Because in the lore of Dungeons and Dragons, elves, Corallon, the head of the elf pantheon, is that kind of being of random energy, takes the form of lightning bolts and what have you. And the elves themselves were split off from that until they annoyed him and he bound them into physical form.
Nice.
So it's a similar sort of thing that I was thinking as well. So I've come up with something else.
Okay. I've also come up with something different.
That's the nature of this podcast.
Yeah. By all means, boys.
We've gotten the concepts down. All right. So kind of also a setting thing, although just side note, that would also be a really cool spell idea. The idea of unraveling someone, that's so cool. You saw a traveler, I see a guard, and I think the conviction here is this is a society, perhaps like the original capital in which all of the threads of the world eventually kind of met, and they've cut themselves off. So this is a society of isolationists, and the conviction is that they are going to be apart from the world no matter what, and that they can see like the threads of the world and they can knit it together if they wanted to, and they're actively choosing not to because they no longer believe in the world. And this valley is kind of like bordering their kingdom of this old capital, and they're, it's like kind of like the King Solomon's Mines society that's
right, yeah, yeah,
eternally cut off by will.
It's a very Matt reference to make.
Yeah.
So are we talking, so in the artwork for this card, which is quite lovely artwork, it's kind of like a raised plateau sort of thing. Is this civilization on a plateau overlooking everything else? It's completely like sheer cliff faces.
It's like
faces.
This big central kind of temple capital city.
It's not really a way to get there by normal means.
Exactly.
Reasonably.
Yeah, you have to be let in because they don't want you in. Yeah.
And that's kind of, so you're also bringing like the world knitting sort of thing, like the reshaping the world ability sort of thing. Is this something they've created? Is this like they built up, like they've changed it? Or?
Yeah, not so much from a magical perspective, more from like, because the card says conspiracy, so I kind of think Illuminati kind of.
Clever, I like that.
Yeah, very politically kind of. They had a lot of control, perhaps historically, as like the very first capital city of like this continent. And they still have like forces in play, like kind of like the spider in Game of Thrones. He can hear everything that's going on in the continent. And they have this information, and they're either using it to make sure they're completely undiscovered, or they're using it for their own advantage, perhaps maliciously, and that's why the adventurers have to go and find this society, or they're using it just to, or perhaps they're not using it. They've just given up on the world and they're staying completely isolated.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the idea that I've come up with is, my pledge is that this figure that we see in this card is an avatar of a god referred to as the World Smith. So this god creates the world as he travels it. So wherever he goes, change will follow. Canyons will appear, rivers will spring up, mountains will be forged, etc., etc. And while this is seen to be a blessing as he revitalizes deserts as he walks through it, he also, in lost in myth, at times where he has walked straight through civilizations and split them asunder. So remaking the world without buildings, without society, without civilization. He does not care for human matters. It is just a matter of always this cycle of growth and change that the natural world is going through. And whether it is just an actual avatar of an actual god, or whether it is just mythos that has explained these great cataclysms that have befallen civilizations in the past, this figure of the World Smith is etched in mythology in this world.
So he might not actually be a physical person.
Yeah. He might not actually be a physical person.
Yeah, like the what religion usually is, it's just like explanations for the unexplainable among like primitive civilizations.
Yeah. And so maybe we can work on that during the turn and prestige, what that actually means and where this mythos has come from.
I also like the resemblance as to like in playing a procedurally generated game or something like Minecraft, how it generates as you're walking.
Oh,
sort of thing.
Yes, yeah.
Just like he's just playing a game of Minecraft and everyone else is having just like, oh my god, oh lord, he's coming, he's gonna turn our valley into a river now.
All right, well, what turn do we want to work on first? Do we feel particularly drawn towards any of those three?
I'm quite intrigued by the World Smith. Like, I think that is a lot of power that I've never really heard in a god before, and that kind of goes back to the getting to know you question, really.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Mm. Well,
it's interesting. Well, power, but not necessarily, like, he has, it's a kind of, is it a power if he's not doing it intentionally, if it's not a conscious thing, is it, it's more of just an effect that happens, possibly, like, he's not actually consciously reweaving the world or something, like, as he moves, it just happens sort of thing.
Okay. Or maybe it is, he is just this, this elemental force of creation that when he slumbers, the world continues without him and societies grow and whatever. But when he wakes, the world goes into a state of flux again. Mm-hmm. So that it's kind of, I guess it's similar to the kind of the Native Australian concept of the dreaming, in that these mythological figures are tied to these places. And if they were to wake up again, everything would start changing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I kind of I guess this idea, if we need to like latch on to like where this mythos sprouts from, like where a player would encounter
it. It's interesting.
If there is like scattered villages in this rather picturesque landscape, and they absolutely refuse to create buildings. They live in huts and lean-tos, and they absolutely refuse. And around them are these ancient ruins, and that's how they explain why they refuse, is because the last time it happened, the Worldsmith awoke and destroyed them.
Yeah, and it might just be a coincidence.
It could have just been a massive earthquake, or a comet landing, or something like that. But they've created one of their pantheon is this Worldsmith figure. Yeah. So that's one way that we can encounter it.
It's interesting, and it'd be interesting how the party interpreted that. It's like, should they change this? Is this like, they should progress, they should make buildings, or is huts okay?
It's also an interesting thing, because we're talking about in a role-playing game, and usually gods exist to give you powers because you're a cleric or a paladin that worships them. And can you worship this
just called him the Worldsmith.
Yeah, can you worship this figure and get power from it or not?
Yeah, way that we're talking about this figure is more like an elemental than a god, so much that it doesn't require your belief. It will just react to what the stimulus that it's given.
A different type of pantheon entirely, perhaps. He came before the other gods or something like that. It could be interesting.
Or perhaps it is a tool used by the gods that when a civilization displeases the gods, they will awaken the Worldsmith, and the Worldsmith will do his duty.
Could I suggest a rename?
Sure.
Just going into world knitting and everything, the World Weaver, and then it has a bit of alliteration in there.
Sure. The only reason I sighed at that is not because I hate it, it's just because I've a few episodes ago I created the interweaving, which was a spell. But World Weave is totally fine, the World Weaver. And so where did we land on that one on the turn? So we perhaps he is, or this figure is, a tool of the gods rather than a god itself.
It also reminds me, sorry, just like a minor note from the fourth Hitchhiker's Guidebook, where there's an incidental character who's a lorry driver who's just, and everywhere he goes, it's constantly raining on him, and he's just miserable about it, and he doesn't know it's because he's a rain god, and the clouds follow him because they just love him so much, and he has no concept that that's why it is. And interesting, like, so, incredible power, but doesn't quite understand that that's what's going on.
Yeah, I like that angle, and I like the idea of him being a tool of the gods. He's kind of like the god's hitman, in a way.
Yeah.
The god's hitman. That's a good idea. I'm changing mine. It's John Wick now.
I was waiting for it.
I always bring him up.
And of course, the final showdown will be the World Weaver versus John Wick.
I know who my money's on.
We'll win.
Of course John Wick will win. He's just a tool of God. He's not a god himself.
Yeah, John Wick isn't a god. He's the man you hire to kill a god.
shall we go on to the Solomon civilization? Do they have a name?
They shall now. We shall call them...
The Solomites.
The Temptation. What's Solomon backwards? Molinos. The Molinos. There you go, done.
Nomolos.
Excellent.
Monolos.
Non-monogamous. The non-monogamists.
Okay. Wait, one more time.
Nomolos.
I like it. Yeah.
Non-monogamous.
Okay, so how are we turning that? Is it how they interact with the world that is kind of going to get them into your game? Is it somehow they're somehow calling for help? Is it some sort of change that they're wreaking on the world?
I would say that the change is that civilizations have expanded since they've cut themselves off. And now civilizations are bordering on the valleys and they're starting to work. Maybe they're mining the mountains surrounding them. Maybe they're lumbering the woodlands that border between the mountains. They're encroaching on this territory. Mm. And now suddenly between other like well-known civilizations, war is breaking out, and it's almost inexplicable why these tensions have suddenly risen and diplomatic relations have collapsed. And it's because this like central civilization that's been asleep in slumber for so long, cut off, they've picked up the threads of the world again, and they've started using their secret like Illuminati political influence to kind of reawaken.
And again, sorry, these are like political threads or some variant that.
Yeah, all political thread. Because
they're just pulling on the string and seeing what happens.
Yeah, they're just sparking. Like, it's almost like they're using blackmail that no one knew that they had the power to enact.
I like to think it's like when you're playing a game like an Endless Legend or something. This is a DLC civilization. It's just like, oh, they've been slumbering for some time, but now they've awoken and everything's going to change.
Yeah, and it's like, I like the idea that throughout the campaign there's always been these conspiracy theorists around that, like in our world, people who believe in the Illuminati and everything.
Nomalos.
And then suddenly, they're nomalos. And then suddenly you have to believe in these conspiracy theorists and the tinfoil hats and all that. And you have to follow their advice,
which
the party would be very reluctant to do.
Yeah.
And you have to try and find the central civilization to stop something that no one believes in.
Introduce a character called Fox Mulder. And it's just like, he's been telling you about this Illuminati civilization and you thought he was crazy. No, I like that.
So they're kind of causing wars surrounding them to stop the expansion
exactly
towards them.
Yeah.
So that gives you a lot of opportunity to kind of like be drawn into those wars and then try to figure out, well, these two people used to get along. What's going on? And then
exactly.
It could be a good like third act sort of thing. Like you retroactively say, it's just like, oh, you find out about this civilization, it's like, oh, they were responsible for this thing and this thing, and you go, oh my god, you've been playing this out this whole time.
Yeah.
Holy crap, sort of thing. Where they're the overarching villain that you don't introduce until later on, but it makes sense because
they were there the whole time.
Yeah. You're just in the shadows.
Yes.
Alright, well that's a great turn. So let's go to Dom. Do you have any thoughts on how we're going to turn yours?
So, like the weaving people into the landscape, whether or not that necessarily changes the landscape accordingly, or maybe this is how change happens in this region or something, like kind of working similar lines to your world, Smith. Like, is this how, or even your civilization, is this how this civilization kind of propagates itself, or terraforms even, just like maybe it's not even just like the worst among them, weave people into the landscape and transform.
I really like
the
idea of like if we flash forward a million years and the civilization itself has crumbled and dissipated, but you're left with this area of basically sentient land that reacts to you as you travel through it.
Yeah.
Either in a positive or a negative way. So if reacting to you in a positive way to try to get you to figure out what's going on and release these spirits, or in a negative way to so that they can absorb you and your knowledge, something like that.
You're accidentally creating accidentally creating gods or something like
that. Like almost primordials.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, like they're not even controlled. Like, imagine walking into a space and some air wants to be brought, like, breathed by certain people, but it doesn't want to be breathed by other people. So,
racist
air. Like, imagine that. Like, I like that idea.
Yeah. You like the idea of racist air. Oh, okay. I see.
Okay. Okay.
I'm
exposed.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is this like, as whether or not maybe as time goes on, it starts out as a punishment, but maybe it becomes a form of ascension.
Because
they're virtually immortal now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of how they treat that that state.
Mm.
It starts out as punishment because like they don't have power, but maybe someone gets buried on a crisscross of ley lines or something like that, and there's accidentally, or you know, what's a druidic place of power or something like that.
Druid circle.
Druid circle, that's the word. Yeah, just like that, just for somehow accidentally someone becomes much more powerful than they're meant to, and it kind of changes everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's great turn. So
I
we
think
have
it's great,
the
yeah.
political unrest caused by the
Nomalos. Nomalos.
Nomalos.
We have the world weaver, the tool of the gods, and we need to name either this area or what we're calling these creatures that are inhabiting the earth. shall we call them like the banished or...
I don't know. Like, because you kind of need a word for the civilization and a word for the process, because it's probably going to be a pretty core part to it, especially. Mm. And then like 1,000 years later, it's something else entirely. Yeah, it's maybe this could be this. What if this is the backstory for how places of power and like druidic circles come into being or something like that?
Whoa. It definitely could be. Yeah.
I think just something similar, just like weaving. I think even just like the wheat, like I think that the better, the possibly the most, you know, you should always try to set your story in the most interesting time period. Maybe 1,000 years later is more interesting, and like the civilization lost a time, they're just called the weavers or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the woven.
Yeah, the people in the ground are the woven, and there's the weavers. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is in the woven. I like it.
Could, with the civilization having gone for a long time, and the spell kind of this ritual really of sending people, of making people become into entropy and everything.
Yeah.
Could it have been misinterpreted? So it was used as a punishment in the original civilization, but they're like, oh, it's ascension. So now they're mixing their most honored with their most, notorious.
Or just like 1,000 years later, just people don't know if the entire civilization did it to themselves, because it's pretty, like, it's a semi-common, like, sci-fi trope of a civilization becoming so advanced that they ascend beyond what we can comprehend as being sentient. Or in the Elder Scrolls series, the Dwemer or the dwarves, they either successfully transcended the bounds of reality, or they destroyed themselves utterly, and we'll never know which one, because how would we ever figure that out?
Either way, they're gone.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I really like the idea of these woven being the one relic that's left behind, and we having to deal with them. Yeah. In the game, that's how I would.
God, I make a lot of references and stuff in the show, which I feel cringy. But there's a, like, in the Culture series by Ian M. Banks. There's a
site. Oh yes, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there's the Dra'Azon. Is that the right one or something? It's just like they're a civilization that they ascended years ago, and they've left their planets behind, sort of thing. And like they are sacred sites as well. Like you can't go there, but like they've left their relics behind and stuff, and I think that's...
So how would we turn this into prestige?
Yeah.
This woven and these weavers, how would we incorporate that into either a story or, like, culminate that into something? I don't know how to do the concept justice but keep them in the ground. Like, I'm not sure, like, to what extent they can change their environment and what a player would actually experience when going through. So maybe we could have a look at that.
I think it's possible you could use it as, again, an origin story for the gods of, or the druidic circles of the campaign setting.
Yeah.
Like, that's a deep lore thing that you can find out, or that could be present from the beginning, like, you know.
So if this has happened in several places around the world, just as maybe as their civilization deteriorated, they became pilgrims and they left the trail of these places, and then you get to this one place where there's this massive concentration of this energy that is, well, I'm not sure. are the druids like trying to use it, or are they afraid of it, or... Maybe there are certain clerics that can't cross this ground or can't consecrate it. Mm. Like it's just a world that doesn't obey the regular laws of physics.
Also, perhaps clerics don't trust it, and they're trying to eradicate it and fight it.
And perhaps because it's ground, like it's earth, like people have been woven into the ground, but then over time, like the shape of the ground changes and the landscape changes, maybe they become merged, like maybe the different consciousnesses entwine over time and or erode even. Like.
Yeah, so maybe part of this lore is that while it has been the focus of druids around the world, maybe this is just a place where the regular rules don't apply. So when your players have to do something absolutely impossible elsewhere in the world, they have to venture to this place, this one place, where technically the rules don't exist.
And maybe that's incredibly dangerous as
well. Yeah, absolutely, because they don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's like wild magic, but in one place, and like not to 100.
And I like the idea of some places being like an epicenter for punishment. So the vibe is really kind of alien.
Yeah,
like,
so they have to kind of find the right place
this. Yeah, one civilization wove people as a punishment. Another one is like the entire civilization wove themselves.
So it's like, so some places are a very holy, accepting place that want to help you. And other places are very abrasive and trying to.
So what about the Nomalos?
The Nomalos.
How are we bringing that into the game? What are we prestiging with this one?
So I think it's the third act when they find out it's the big bad that's been there the whole time. So they have to venture into a kingdom that every single kind of like as soon as they step over the line, even before, eyes are on them, and as soon as they step over the line, everything is trying to kill them. So it's like this very hardcore Indiana Jones, like, find the treasure, destroy the conspiracy once
run
and for
away
all.
From the boulder.
Run and run. Yeah,
climb through a pit of snakes.
You know this temple's coming down when they're trying to get out.
it's an entire, like, civilization as well, though. Mm-hmm. So, like, is everyone in the civilization in on it, or is...
Yeah, right. the conviction of the civilization is isolationism.
Yeah.
It's like they are better than the world surrounding them, and they do not want that world infecting their paradise. And they view it as a paradise.
Do they reveal themselves, or are they discovered? Like, do they decide the time has come for everyone to know about our influence, or does someone pull the thread, to continue the same metaphor,
figure it out? I think as the wars grow more drastic, and human nature being what it is, they completely underestimated how big the war would become. And in an effort to stop the lumbering and the mining, it's actually increased because they need it for their war machines and everything. So they reveal themselves and they start, you know, marching forth and pretty much becoming a powerhouse in this war. And now it's up to the party to strike this plague at its source and end pretty much all wars.
I'm kind of seeing it as like they have this one advantage, which is like, I guess like Atlantis, the Disney movie, where they have this power source that if that's destroyed, a lot of what their civilization uses to structure itself will disappear, which gives them which removes their upper hand, which then does make it like this subterfuge mission to get in and destroy this and then get out without dying.
So
I think it's a great setting to kind of have that third act. You've fought the war, you've discovered that there's these shadow figures that are puppeteering things, and then you have to kind of get in, destroy it. Get out with everything trying to kill you.
Absolutely. And I cannot emphasize this enough. The temple will collapse around you as you're trying to escape. Absolute necessity if you use this concept.
The crystal skulls will form.
No crystal like skulls.
A UFO will appear. Kate Blanchett's brain will melt.
No.
Okay,
can't forget the ants.
Oh, not the ants.
The World Weaver for prestige.
So World Weaver is the name now?
Well, I still like Worldsmith.
Let's go with Worldsmith.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Because you have the Weavers and the Woven, which I think fits better with your concept.
Yeah, I just like the World Smith. It feels like that makes me feel like it's a conscious thing. Like it's an intentional creation thing. It's not a change. It's making something out of ingredients. It's not transforming like a valley into a mountain or anything like that. It's very specific. Taking the ingredients and making it into something specific. So
something more fluid and natural rather than kind of clunky and manufactured.
A whisper on the wind said catalyst, which could work.
I don't mind any of that. I just like the idea that a smith destroys to create. That sort of thing where he's basically beating the world with a hammer to put things in order. So I've kind of like the idea that at any point there is a Worldsmith wandering the planet that doesn't know that they're this being yet, or they have this capability. And then when the gods call on them, everything starts being destroyed around them, based around their particular just whim. So if your party is looking for the source of this destruction, because obviously there would be cults that spring up around it or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then you find out that it is just this regular guy. He's like, just a guy, yeah. And this is happening around me.
I have the worst luck.
Well, no, I think he's aware that he's doing it, but he can't stop it. And so it's really like a choice of if you kill this innocent guy to save civilization, in inverted commas or not, or whether or not you try to bargain with the gods or something like that.
So definitely for a party with a druid in it, so that'd be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it is druids.
Ugh.
You know what they're like.
Almost as bad as clerics, am I right?
Clerics.
And clerics are only watered down paladins. Ugh.
I have 2 levels in cleric on my current character, so maybe back off right now.
I've never played a cleric before in my life.
I've actually never played a cleric either. So
I'm not really playing a cleric. I just
wanted their special powers.
Exactly. I wanted heavy armor and shit, I think.
Do either of you have any like twists on that idea? Like, that's just...
It's I think that would be very interesting to come across in a campaign. It's just like there's like a cataclysmic thing is coming, and then it's just some guy.
Yeah.
I think because tying it back to the card, like this one person who is just kind of like looking back at what's happened, standing on the ruins.
Did I do that?
Did I? Well, I think he would have a kind of "did I do that" attitude. Like, I love the idea of it just being like a guy who's really. Would he be mortal? Like, or
I think as soon as he dies, like
it passes on to another person.
Yes, the essence of the world.
I don't think he would keep a very kind of relaxed, normal guy attitude if he realized he had this kind of thing. And I actually think he'd almost relish in the chaos that he brings, almost like this demonic playboy kind of character.
That could be part of the mythos, is that there was this worldsmith who relished in walking straight through.
So the interesting thing, another interesting thing, is that he has to be moving for it to happen. It's like it's a rolling change that's happening. It's not that he's staying in a city and it's transforming constantly. Like, as he moves through something, it changes around him. So if he is like a traveler, just he's doing that, is it a conscious thing, or is it something he doesn't quite understand why he's doing it?
Well, no, I think like maybe the longer he stays still, like the more pain he's in. Just to survive and...
He's got to travel.
Yeah. So I kind of see him as this kind of libertine playboy kind of swashbuckling, just like racketeer, just going from place to place, having a good time and not giving a crap about the
chaos. That's the thing, like this could definitely be a curse that is placed on a player character. Although maybe a character that wants to be written out, and so they just kind of take off and you have to track them through this through
and
the rubble.
Maybe like a plot hook could also be that different factions are vying to control this person with this power. And so it's like, hey, I'll give you 500 gold if you walk through that city right now.
Or I'll give you 500 gold to head east and never turn west.
Yeah. It's just like,
oh no.
So what I want you to do is I want you to walk as far south as you can, then turn around and just make a line of mountains all the way north, because the people in the east, they don't want much to do with the people in the west anymore.
Oh no, he's walked too far east. He's coming back.
All right, okay. So
geography work.
I'm very happy with those. So we have the Worldsmith, we have the Nomalos, and we have the Weavers and Woven.
Yes.
So you can use any of those in your game if you wish. We're publishing this under a Creative Commons license, so that means that you are free to share and use it. But if you're going to replicate, please don't change it. And if you're going to use it somewhere else, just give us a little bit of credit. That's all we ask. If you need more information on that, you can find it at our home on the web. That's notcanon.com/hooked. If you have any artwork that you'd like to submit to us to use for inspiration, you can send it to us on Facebook, on Twitter, or an email at podcast_hooked@gmail.com. And we will be back in the same place at the same time next week. Thank you very much, Dom.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you very much.
See you later, everyone.
Bye.
Farewell.